Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 23 on Tuesday, the 9th of February, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
And I believe that we're not just a podcast anymore.
No, we are apparently a cure for hangovers. Thank you, the at the face of Ben, which is Ben Pierce from the wonderful Smooth Traffic podcast. If you don't listen, people, do go and give it a go. It's excellent. Was commenting to his colleagues, saying that, and I'm going to quote here because it was one of our best bits of feedback ever. It's the perfect cure for my hangover. Tea and the Motoring Podcast. Smiley face. So thank you very much for that. At the face of Ben.
Yes, and if Ben, you could go off and tell that to iTunes, then that would be really, really good as well. Please. Every little helps. We've got to keep ahead of that little green blob in the iTunes podcast charts as well. Oh, wait, that's enough to stop you doing it. Never mind. No, thank you, guys. Much appreciated. Really, 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 really appreciated. I put out another little piece of content that we created as a result of the Mini and BMW day that Andrew and I did a couple of weeks ago. And it's the one which I've been psyching myself up for a while. It is actually a little piece of video content, of my sort of spur of the moment thoughts on the Mini John Cooper Works, including me confessing out loud about my previous unease. With post Isigonus minis. So, yes, I gently and politely implore you, in a very British way, to go and have a little bit of a look at that. Naturally, the link will be in the show notes.
Yes, no, it's a good one. I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Yes, thanks. And I'm sure, yeah, there's a little bit, and there's a little bit of text about it too. It's actually in the, if you're going to the show notes, you might as well just go straight to the blog page at motoringpodcast.com and follow the link on the front page, and it will take you to the first drive of the John Cooper Works. Yes, sorry. Self-publicity, done.
No, absolutely. Okay, moving on though. It's that time of the month again, Alan.
It is absolutely the time of the month that we all look forward to. And it is the SMMT new car sales figures. The surprise delight for me each month. And it's not been a bad month. Best January since 2005 for new car market registrations. 169,678 units were sold, and that's up 2.9%.
Yeah, that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
There was some certain companies were big winners.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Jaguar. They were up from 800 to 2,252.
I have seen a lot of XEs this month. In the last month. I just seem to have noticed lots of XEs, and I've seen quite a few new XFs as well. So, yeah, I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit not misleading is the right word, but it's a bit flattering to look at only the percentages. So I've tried to highlight a few percentages where the numbers were actually fairly decent.
Yeah.
For example, Honda was up 25%.
Yeah.
They went from 3,600 to 4,500.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this isn't a massive jump, but it obviously is percentage-wise. But Jeep, again, 139%. So they went up from 336 up to 804.
The Renegade is appearing now in the same kind of way as the original Cherokee was appearing lots whenever Jeep first entered the UK market, however many years ago. I'm seeing the Renegade. I'm seeing lots of Renegades in the same way as in sort of rural Perthshire, one used to see lots of Jeep Cherokees. And then there was a period when that died off again. So I'm really hoping that doesn't happen and that Jeep do kind of keep it up, really, and keep making sure they've got. There's new stuff on the way. There's a new Grand Cherokee and stuff on the way.
Yeah. Renault did really well as well.
All right. Oh, good.
37.43%. So from 3,000 up to 4,100.
So just quickly, a Renault selling more than Honda or not? Because that's similar numbers.
Let me just check.
For those of you who can't tell, Andrew has the spreadsheet open.
Oh, yeah, you're asking me to go through many little fine little lines. They're not quite selling as many.
All right. Okay, that's what I thought. It sounded similar just there.
Yeah, no, it is. They're thereabouts with each other, but Honda's just selling a few more. Mm-hmm. Smart, again, this isn't in the thousands of numbers. This is only a few hundred, but Smart have gone up from 192 to 703.
Wow. Sorry. Wow.
This podcast is genuinely surprised at how well Smart does, because I don't see any advertising for it.
Last week's autocar. There you go.
I don't see it out and about. I'm not near, you know, I'm in a bit of a countrysidey town, and it's only occasionally I go into...
You're in a posh part of the country, aren't you?
No, I'm not. We're in a part that's underwater, but... We're thinking of the next generation needs to grow gills, but
I thought you fixed that leak. Yeah,
but occasionally I'll go in to a larger metropolis area, and I will see a garage. But they're not common cars around our way around here, so that's why I think I'm more surprised than anything.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the. The sales for January, Ford, 22,035. The next highest is Vauxhall at 15,000.
Mm.
And then there's Volkswagen at 12,000-ish. Mercedes at 11,800. So Volkswagen at 12,055. Mercedes are a nice round 11,800. And then there's Audi.
Yep.
And Nissan. And then there's a big gap, really. There's a huge, I mean, Ford are way out ahead. They cannot be, you know. They're what, 8,000? I just said 8,000. It's 7,000. It's been a long day, folks. 7,000 7,000 cars ahead of the next nearest rival. That's over a third more.
Yeah.
Half as much again.
But there's some that are, there are some losers.
Mm-hmm.
Volkswagen, down nearly 14%.
This is true.
Seat.
Down 24%. Maserati are down 28%.
Well, no, there's an even worse one than that. Chrysler are down 100%.
Yeah, that doesn't really count, though, mate. They don't sell them.
I know.
Wait, hang on a minute. Let's check out the numbers. Oh, they sold 57 in 2015.
Yeah.
No. Zero. Rien du tout. A Bath up 50%, though. MG up 131%. I did notice that there was a press release about that.
Yep.
And I was curious, and the press release didn't say how many cars. So instead of 135, they've registered 313 this year round. So it must have been time to renew the press fleet.
So what were the best sellers model-wise, though, Alan?
So best sellers model-wise, the Festa is out front, as you might explain. I should really do this a top ten countdown if I was on.
I'm not editing the music in.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough. No. Cash—that's as good a reason to not. The Cash Guy, 4,839. The Corsa, 4,803. So almost neck and neck. Focus 4.2, Golf 3A, Duke, Polo, A3, Astra, and then the Mercedes C-Class. Surprise. Mm.
That surprised me, that did, actually.
3,022. And funnily enough, the year-to-date figures are exactly the same.
And I'm actually surprised by the Duke.
Because what, by the number?
Yeah, that's been out a long while.
It has.
Is it due a facelift or a new model? Or have they had a facelift? I can't remember.
If it's... As the owner of an Isuzu Veyacross, I'm not in a position to extract the urine, but it wouldn't be, yes, it's certainly had something funny done to its face. It has had a facelift a little while ago. I would imagine we're probably a year or so away from a new Duke. I have nothing to substantiate that, though. That's me just saying it based on gut feeling. Mm.
But once again, the Ford Fiesta, a country mile ahead of everyone else.
I'll tell you what. I would imagine. Sorry, I'm still thinking about the Duke. Okay. Sunderland plant has just brought the Infinity Q30 and QX30 on stream. Yeah.
Yep.
So now that that's on stream, I'll bet. So now this is a bit nerdy. Now that's on stream, I bet you they've got 6 months to bring the next new product on stream. I don't think we're looking at a new Leaf yet. I don't think we're looking at a new Qashqai yet. Given
no, I'm sure that was refreshed not so long ago.
It's a new model that's only a couple of years old. It was the one that got renewed. But so yeah, after just about the Leaf time, after the Leaf was the Qashqai, then after the Qashqai was the Q30.
So
I imagine that in the next 9 months or so, we'll be seeing a new Duke.
Okay.
Just
you
thinking
heard it here
back
first,
through the
folks.
cycle of what comes through, and that's based purely on the factory. So you know, in there, but it sells away and sells away good style. I see them
over the place around here. I mean, it is such a big seller.
Yeah, it's a nice wee car actually to drive, even if you don't like the outside. It's a lovely wee car to drive. Really is. I rate the Duke quite highly.
Right, moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Volkswagen.
Here we are again.
Oh, they're just being sued everywhere. I mean, what triggered this week was actually the fact that the state of New Jersey, home of Ferrari, have filed a lawsuit against Volkswagen AG and it's and Audi and all the others over the excess diesel emissions in the US, and it is the fourth US state to take legal action, and it's all over the 580,000 alleged vehicles sold in the US since 2009 that emit. They're saying, according to, I've forgotten where it is from, where it's from now, Automotive News, up to 40 times the legally allowable emissions under normal use.
Yeah, so that's it's the four states and the US Justice Department.
The other states being Texas, New Mexico, and West Virginia, which are all recognized for being forward-thinking, progressive states within the US.
And Harris County within Texas.
And Harris County within Texas is just as counties just decide to join in as well. But, I mean, there's loads. I mean, there's 500 civil lawsuits, more than 500 civil lawsuits, so good luck with them, folks. They're also being investigated by 48 U.S. state attorneys general. That's a funny plural. And California has rejected... a recall plan for 480,000 2-liter diesel cars, saying it was insufficient and not timely enough. So they're not allowed to do it until somebody decides how to make a time machine, I assume. Mm-hmm. It just, again, there we go.
But this week, Volkswagen and Porsche have delayed their shareholder meeting, haven't they, or their public meeting.
Oh, right.
Because yes. the reason I'd heard or seen on Twitter that was and automotive press that was thrown around was because they were still trying to work out how much it was going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
The fallout. And if you've got more states coming on board to sue you, and if you've got states saying, no, that's not going to fix it, and you've taken too long, go away, come back again. Then they can't possibly sit there and go, right, this is how much we think it's going to cost, because they're going to be wrong.
Yeah, they're always going to be wrong. And the trouble is that the job of shareholders, professional shareholders, so to speak, in these cases is to sit there and basically they want to know the numbers, because they've got a lot of people interested in those numbers. They've got...
But what it boils down to, the shareholders are the only ones that really hold the board accountable, aren't they, in these massive...
Well, that also is true, yes.
You know, in whatever form they decide accountable is, usually it's lining their pockets, but you know, in the form of dividends and all the rest of it. But if they don't feel that it's being run well, then they make their voices heard. And we've seen more shareholder meetings become very anti-board and anti-CEOs because of the way they've handled things. So, you know, if people can see that their share price and therefore what they had on paper in money has been decimated, they're not going to be happy bunnies.
No. And so, I mean, it's a tricky tightrope for VW to walk, really, because they've got to make sure they can't delay this indefinitely, basically. Mm-mm. They've got to make sure that they do come up and they do give answers, because these questions are going to be asked. And unless they answer the questions to the shareholders, the shareholders are going to be raging. So they're going to sell, and so the value of the company is going to drop even further. And it's a vicious circle. Mm. But sure, it's great to have the right numbers, but you can't leave the shareholders in a state of uncertainty either.
No.
You know, it is blooming hard for them to make sure that they're walking that tightrope and leaning the correct way at the correct time to make sure they don't fall off. There was one other VW thing, wasn't it, with the issues with their quality chief.
Yep, the hits keep coming. Frank, is it Tuch or Tuch? How would you pronounce
Tuch.
It? Tuch. Tuch. So apologies to anyone who can actually pronounce words. Head of Group Quality Assurance for VW has left his role. Uh-huh. It is alleged that he was one of the people that was, suspended when the internal investigation started.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
And he has asked to leave, and they've said okay, and he's still going to be an advisor.
It's worth mentioning that he has not been accused of any wrongdoing, and VW has said it regretted his decision to quit, which was at his own request.
Yep.
And his replacement's already been named, hasn't it?
And I'm not going to try and pronounce that. Hans Jochen.
So Herr Rothenpeiler is replacing him, who is already a sort of well-known internal Porsche. Internal Volkswagen expert having been there for 30 years, holding posts at Volkswagen, Bentley, and Skoda.
I would imagine that if you are head of group quality assurance, you suddenly wield an awful lot of power.
Possibly.
Depends on how the board take it. But
yes.
If they are trying to eradicate such problems from happening in the future, and the problem VW have got, having been into plenty of companies and having been involved in quality assurance, albeit not in a manufacturing sense, the problem they've got is not bombarding everyone with bureaucracy to fix the problem. And because if they do that, suddenly you're employing people just to tick boxes rather than do work.
Yes, yeah. Quality, with a capital K, in some cases, is a very, very... I've already used the tightrope analogy, hasn't I? It's a tricky one to get right. You want to be striving for. You know what the processes people should be following. But actually making sure that it is something which is an inbuilt part of what everybody does. I'm in work mode now. Is an inbuilt part of what everybody does, as opposed to something tacked on top in a knee-jerk manner, is very, very difficult. And I think I think it's going to be a case of making sure that stuff is ingrained in people. It's more than just drawing a little process map and some procedures and some tick boxes and stuff. It's a serious thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go too far into work.
No. But that is a danger they've got on top of everything else that's going on. But let's move on. Let's move away from depressing Volkswagen news.
Yes. On quite a significant bombshell. Well, surprising just about everyone. Okay. Top Gear and the producer of Top Gear and Chris Evans, obviously the key presenter of the latest iteration of Top Gear, announced that Matt LeBlanc, of all people, is to be one of the new presenters of Top Gear when it returns in August.
And so, Twitter lost its...
Oh, gee.
It's not saying naughty word over it. My gosh.
Would you believe that he was always stuck in second gear, that the new Top Gear is going to always be stuck in second gear, and just about everything that could have been always stuck in second gear was in always stuck in second gear? Sorry. If I saw that joke once on Twitter the other day, I saw it about 15 times applied to different things. And then people would leave it for about 4 hours, and then all of a sudden there'd be another, the same joke would come around from someone else who thought that was new and witty and fantastic.
But everyone's lost their shizzle over it, and they haven't even seen him have a go.
Exactly.
Which is the problem we had a few weeks ago when people were talking about possible Top Gear present. We don't know yet. Let's give it a go.
Yes.
I mean, he is actually a car nut.
Absolutely, to the manyth degree. I mean, there was, I don't know if you've seen Not Friends for a change, but Episodes.
Mm.
The Alpha 8C Cabrio in Episodes is actually his Alpha 8C.
And when he talks about having to sell the cars, that isn't acting, I don't think. That is him giving a genuine reaction to being threatened with selling his car collection.
Yeah. He's I read the, I mean, I said before, just at the start of the year, that I'd read, I was going to refer to him as Sniff Petrol again, and I've completely forgotten his real name.
Richard Porter.
Richard Porter's. And on that bombshell, book, over Christmas. And one of the things, one of the bits in there is he's talking about the, he's talking about, you know, the stars and reasonably priced cars, and just how you couldn't always guess who was going to be an absolute, who was going to be a joy to have around, and who was going to be maybe slightly more difficult. And he said, Matt LeBlanc, basically, he turned up first thing in the morning, and he was there hanging around, sitting on desks, talking to people and drinking mugs of tea until basically everyone was packing up to go home. Everyone was going home and had packed up. He had fitted in so neatly at the time, and was just having a great time. So whenever it was announced, it was like, whoa. And it was like, oh no, actually that makes sense. From what I've heard, that makes a lot of sense, because I knew it was a total car nut. So yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I am too. Well, yeah. This is what we said the other week, is I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be another motoring show on. It's not going to be the old new Top Gear.
Yes.
I've got to get my...
the
get your tenses correct or your time zones correct.
The future new Top Gear.
Yes. it's going to have... Well, if they've got any sense, they'll go in a slightly different way, because they know they're going to be compared to it, and you're going to get, on that first night, you're going to get half the internet who goes, it's the worst thing I've ever seen, and half the internet that goes, it's brilliant. And that's what it's going to be for the
and
rest of its
the
life.
Half the internet that goes, well, it's better than I was expecting.
Mm. And the same will happen when whatever Clarkson, Hammond, Mays thing is called on Amazon comes out. You're going to get all the people who go, rubbish, hated it, can't stand them. Well, why were you watching it? And...
Yeah, some people just set out to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't think you're going to enjoy it, don't bother watching it. There you are. Save yourself an hour and all that stress and emotion, negative emotion and all the rest of it, and go and do something fun. You know, just do something else. Don't be
go do something more
polluted.
Boring instead.
Yeah, so
switch off that.
I can't wait for them all to come out.
We're going to be spoiled for choice.
It's going to be great. My wife is going to hate it, but I'm going to love it.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Really am. There was something else I was going to say that, and I've now forgotten what it was. Oh, yeah. You'll notice we're not commenting on Eddie Jordan rumors until they stop being Eddie Jordan rumors. Okay. When if anything's confirmed, we'll talk about it, but not until then.
No.
There. Good. So.
Right, moving on.
Yes, yes. That was a pleasant, short, light, gentle interlude. So let's talk about nitrogen oxide emission levels in the EU, Andrew.
Yeah, quite.
You guys plan this beforehand, guys. And girls.
There has been agreement reached in the European Parliament. I know that's hard to believe.
Well, yes. You say agreement. There would seem to have been a compromise reached in the European Parliament.
Well, that's technically an agreement.
Well, yes. Yeah, it is.
Europe's car manufacturers are going to be allowed to exceed the EU pollution targets for a small number of years.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to put in some hard work, the manufacturers, to make it clear that it had to happen.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they were just going to have to shut plants. So the Green, and I'm quoting here from Auto News of Europe, and said, the Green and Liberal lawmakers said the compromise, which will allow diesel cars to exceed permitted levels of nitrogen oxide pollutants by 50%, had prioritised saving jobs above saving lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a good one for the headline.
It's a little bit drama llama.
Yeah, but the essence is correct, that they have been allowed to exceed it. And I'm trying to work out how many years it is. I'm trying to find that bit. It's honestly, okay, so we prepare for this show beforehand. It's only for a small number of years, and then they've got then it comes down and how much they're allowed to exceed, and then it's obviously nothing, and they've got to be under the target.
I think the reason you can't find it is that it's not in this article.
Oh, that would make a very good reason.
From what I can tell, it's not in this article, because I've just reread it, which explains. Yes.
It will be in the show notes, everyone. Yes, we will look that one up.
Oopsie.
Yeah. Normally we prepare actually quite well for this, and that's... Well, there you go. There you see. That's quite poor. Apologies, everyone, for that one.
Yes. So for some years, that will be allowed to continue, but not for very long. Basically, in order to protect the car plants. So that people have, so that manufacturers have time to bring the next generation of model through, which should be able to meet these. Otherwise, I'm sure that they won't get too far through the whatever new pollution testing takes place.
Well, I would imagine,
I've read this three times now, mate, and I can't see it.
No, it's not there. I would imagine that car manufacturers are now filtering monies into engine R&D.
Mm-hmm.
Desperately to try and get there as quickly as possible, because these things take so many years to do.
Yeah, and I was thinking during the week, that's one of the good things about electric. You see, it's very easy for manufacturers to develop electric cars now.
Yeah,
because you can essentially pluck all the bits, pluck all the components off the shelf. Because no one cares if everybody's cars share the same motor, for example. Okay, so nobody cares if you're...
Well, no, because you're not going, listen to the raspy noise of this exhaust, are you?
Well, exactly. They've all got essentially that... Now, this is where electric motor nerds pop in and go, actually, Alan, you're wrong. They don't all have exactly the same torque characteristics. But the motor's a motor. It's a big coil of copper, all right, and some steel and some magnets and some terminals for in and out. You know, that's basically your motor. It doesn't matter who makes that motor, because the characteristics are all given to it by software, essentially. All the electronics around that give it its characteristics, the combination of the motor and the battery pack and the software all come together to give you your range and, you know, just how fast it's sensible that the software will let you accelerate and all these kind of things. So actually... VW doing that huge sidestep in the second half of last year and going, well, actually, you know what? We're going to become an electric car company. You know, and you just think, well, we're going to buy this many electric motors off the shelf, this many battery cells off the shelf and configure them how we need. And we're going to write some software or buy some of this core code, add our own parameters over the top, and we're done. Basically, we'll slot that in. And we can, you know, we can tune it. We know all about suspension tuning. We know all about chassis tuning. So we can sort that and make that all work. It's really much, much simpler, much, much quicker and cheaper than trying to develop a new internal combustion engine, where it has to be your internal combustion engine with hundreds and hundreds of tiny little parts, all individually tweaked to be awesome, with tiny, tiny tolerances coming together and making sure that all of that works, all of the testing that needs to be done to that. Whereas basically, you can strip the drivetrain out of a Passat at the minute, shove some batteries low down in the chassis, and a ready, you know, electric motor, possibly a gearbox, if you're that way inclined, because you don't have to have the gearbox, as we'll talk about in a second. And there you go. You can go off and start tuning its driving characteristics and learning that stuff very, very quickly. So it doesn't surprise me that Volkswagen did that big sidestep, which puts them ahead, one would hope, when it comes to actually, when it comes to all these pollution targets, because they become null and void, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. That was another soapbox moment there, mate.
It's okay. Glossed over the fact that I was rubbish at producing information. Actual facts.
Oh, who needs actual facts? It's the internet, man.
Well, we try occasionally.
We do.
Right. Let's move on.
Yes, so I've already alluded a little bit to gearboxes and no gearboxes. One of my favourite Formula E E-Prix of the year happened on Saturday, and that was the one in Buenos Aires in Argentina. And it was an awesome race. Did you see any of it, mate?
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't. Okay, so let's start off. Congratulations to Sam Bird. Of DS Virgin Racing Formula E for coming first and for basically leading all weekend. Cracking result. Nice to have a Brit right on the highest step of the podium. Genius. Well done. Absolutely excellent. Sebastian Buemi came in second in a Renault E-Dams. So this, funnily enough, is the Renault team, formerly Prost, and run by Alain Prost, half-sized person Alain Prost. But he did a fantastic drive, right? He started last place on the grid, okay? And right the way up, he came right the way up to second place. And if you look at the overall time, the gap between Sam Bird and Sebastian Buemi at the end of 35-lap race was 0.7 seconds. Okay?
From last.
He came up to within 0.7 seconds of winning.
Because third was 7.5 seconds behind.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the Buemi-Degrassi race, Lucas Degrassi had a couple of issues. towards the end to do with battery charge, I think, and stuff. I could be wrong there, but it was absolutely cracking race, but by Buemi right the way up through the field, once again showed just, you know, you don't need super amounts of power, you don't need super high speeds for to have great racing, which is a reason why you should A, watch Formula E, and B, watch club racing on your local track, please, people. But it was a great race, really good. Part of the reason for the delay and stuff, I think, was to do with the safety car session that there was partway through the Qualcomm safety car. And, God, if only we were sponsored. So yeah, it was excellent. Well done to Lucas Degrassi coming in third for the Abt Audi Sport. One of the things you might notice there is that there's in the top five positions, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 car makers. Well, Venturi doesn't really count. 3.5 anymore. But yeah, you'll notice that for season two, for any of you who didn't notice, and this wasn't totally announced when we did episode 5, when I was chatting to Graham Davison, is so DS and Virgin DS bought significantly into Virgin, Renault into the Prost team, and Audi had already kind of started last year by being the by buying into the ABT team as well. So yeah, this is big manufacturers getting in on electric vehicles. I made a crack earlier on about the not necessarily needing a gearbox. I mean, you remember, I'm sure you've all listened to it, and if not, go back and listen to it again, please.
It will be in the show notes.
It will be in the show notes. But Graham was saying about gearboxes and stuff. Well, the other thing that's quite nice about the mix-up here is there's different cars here with different gearbox setups. So, for example, the DS Virgin Racing has a gearbox, because you have to have a gearbox in Formula E. You don't necessarily have to have anything in the gearbox. So they don't.
God, not one of those daft rules.
It is a slightly daft rule. You mostly need the
lawyers
gearbox.
Look over and then give it to the engineers.
You mostly need the gearbox to hold the back wheels, all right? Whatever you might say, you mostly need the gearbox to hold the back wheels and the rear suspension. So there was always going to need to be there. But to fundamentally keep the proportions of the cars the same. In there, so that was quite a difference. But yeah, Sam Bird was fairly drifting it around that sharp hairpin. Anyway, that's as close as I'm going to ever get to being a racing commentator. But no, it was a great race. Next race, Mexico City. It's in about a month's time. There's a big gap now. So yeah, Mexico City Ypres, 31 days at the time of recording. 31 days, 17 hours, 4 minutes, and 22 seconds from the Formula E website. 17 seconds.
I will do my best to watch it, because I saw a few bits of races last year and I thought that's actually quite interesting. You know, it's not a procession. There is they've clearly put some thought behind how to make the sport interesting to the spectators, mm-hmm. not just on the track, but the whole thing, the whole event be an event.
Yeah.
Even if you're not there. So I applaud the way they've done it. When you look at how Formula One fans are treated, which is appallingly, and you look at Formula E, you just think, oh, could you please take over?
The fan boost working through the, you know, during the race and things, so that you as fans can influence the race and influence who gets extra bits of power and stuff during the race. Mm. You're not doing all the voting or whatever before. You're doing it during the race, supposedly. That was an absolute riot to get the FIA to agree to that one. But they did. So there's a bit of a precedent there now. The one thing is, this next race in Mexico City, by the way, is I believe that ITV4 are showing snooker instead. So you may have to watch on YouTube. And the secret is to log into YouTube earlier for the practices, and then just leave it logged in between. There's a bit of a gap where it says, we're not streaming right now. But if you do that, then...
is it a case of, well, I've got the pipe open, so it'll still come through.
Yes. Yes, because otherwise they don't
stream... Welcome to the future, ladies and gentlemen.
They don't stream YouTube in the UK for the actual race, because ITV4 have the rights to the race.
Right.
So... I was informed by someone that may or may not be a workaround. However, whether or not it's still a workaround in a month's time is a different matter.
Mm.
Yes. So, anyway, that's that.
Moving on.
Formula E, it's always nice to pump that.
Yep, no. But moving on.
A couple more Geneva leaks this week.
Yes.
Let's save it in the show before we get to the show. Don't forget, of course, there's another video of me making a fool of myself available via motoringpodcast.com of my top 7 tips for visiting the Geneva Motor Show, should you be thinking about going.
Mm.
But anyway, Citroën. Citroën
Space Tourer hyphen concept.
Mm. And he's not spelling it. It is called hyphen, H-Y-P-H-E-N.
Mm.
Yeah. I think it's quite cool.
Now, we'll start off, I love the looks of it.
But it's an MPV, Andrew.
No, it's not.
Oh, isn't it?
Nope. Nope, that's a jacked up van with some seats in it. I love that. That's not an MPV. That's not pretending to be an MPV.
I think it's cool. If you like the Mitsubishi Delica in its various forms, so that's the sort of jacked up van on Pajero and Shogun underpinnings, then you should like the Space Tourer Hyphen.
Well, considering we were chatting at the weekend about future crack windscreen cars to fall my horde and all their mountainous amounts of rubbish that we seem to need to take with us, which seems to be a lot less than other people when I see them driving around, but still way too much. If I was in the market for a new car and this was out, my God, I'd be going to have a look at this. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's got loads of chunky plastic on the side, which I like, because that just pleases the child in me. It's if you can have some really big, fat tyres on it, that'll do nicely. I hope the ride's okay, but there's going to be acres of space in there.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Brilliant. That's actually what it's going to be, is some competition to the Caravelle and the Mercedes. Is it still called a Vito? The new?
Oh, it depends. No. I can't remember what it's called.
Whatever the new...
There's a V-Class, which is the super expensive one, but then there's the van version, also has a name.
Yeah, because I've heard lots of reports that the latest version is a massive step up on the old one, so it doesn't feel like a plumber's van anymore. It's pucker now. So there's some competition into that, because round our way, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because I... keep an eye out for them, but there's so many Caravelles around, or Type 4s that have been converted and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems sensible to go for it.
It's definitely a market where they could be doing more competition.
And I like it a lot.
Yeah, I love the name, by the way. The silly name is because it was a collaboration between Citroën and the French pop group -, which I'm sure is not how they pronounce it, and I'm not quite sure how they would pronounce it, and I'm not even going to try, because I'll offend people. Andrew will
laugh. That's not like you.
Yeah.
Holding back from offending people.
I know. But standard Space Tourer, moving on. We'll go on sale in the UK in short, medium, long wheelbase format. Start of September, it's expected. Price from 24 grand to over 31 grand for the top spec Space Tourers, which is still significantly cheaper.
That's cheap.
You for something like that, it is. Yeah.
The Caravelle's not.
Silly money.
I think I saw somewhere that it's like a grand a month on PCP.
You kid me.
No. If you have it
Is that not the full California?
If you have it... No. I think this was just specced out with really nice interior and plenty of seats. And I think this was being sold as a businessman's luxury barge type thing, you know, where they could work whilst being driven places.
Mm, oh, right. Okay. Well, yeah, you do get those. You get Merc conversions of that. I'm sure I'll bring back a photo of at least one from Geneva where it's got, like, basically first-class airline seats inside.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, so what you're going to see in Geneva then is going to be virtually production ready.
Yes, it should be.
And that engine, 110 grams per kilogram.
And 150 brake, 6-speed manual, shared with the Peugeot Traveller and Toyota Proace.
Wow, I mean, I know that's not rapid, but that's decent.
It should be swift enough.
Considering you're in a you're in a very upright, boxy vehicle, that the idea is not that you're taking the Evo triangle at top speed.
No, you're not going to be aiming, clipping every apex with that. But
no, I like that a lot as a.
I'm genuinely surprised. I originally put this into the lineup because I thought, oh, it'll be a laugh because Andrew will hate it.
No, it ticks a lot of boxes because it's not pretending to be an MPV. It's a van that they have said, no, actually, we can use that in an alternative way.
Yeah,
and I like the idea of that.
Yeah. He likes.
Yeah,
I like it too. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
I please, lots of pictures of that.
Hmm, will do. Lots of pictures, mate. you've never seen. I come back with about 400 pictures generally, and this year I will be on an intentional mission as well. So yeah. We'll see what I come back with.
Okay, so moving on from that is perfect for my horde to... Is this up your street?
Remarkably, it is. I have said for the last few years that I don't really like Ferraris. But there's always been an exception to that, and that has been the FF, the one that everybody else says, it's not a proper Ferrari, you know. It's four-wheel drive, and it's got a boot hatch, and it's a shooting brake. And they've all grumbled about it. Well, there is a new super facelifted version of the FF called the Ferrari GTC4 Lusso. And there are no spaces in that. You can breathe
in the middle of that. No, you can't. You're not allowed.
Ridiculous name. But it's nice. It's a bit like a kind of chiseled FF. It's as if the FF has been down the gym and have got rid of some of those flabbier bits.
Well, I saw some comparison pictures today
myself,
and it looks to me that the nose has been slightly lengthened and the roof line's been lowered as well. I mean,
Has it been lowered, or does it just look like the picture
of the FF was white and the picture of the GTC4 Lusso was in space grey or whatever they're going to call it. Excellent. But it looks nice.
And new tail lamps, new twin circular tail lamps, evoking some of my favourite Ferrari stuff like the Daytona and that kind of thing. I like it. I really like the FF. This is even nicer. A mere 680 brake horsepower from its 6.2-litre V12. 80% of torque from 1750 RPM, 7-speed dual clutch. It would do me nicely if anybody fancies lending me a long-term one to, you know, revise my views on Ferrari in much the same way as the 40 minutes with a Mini John Cooper Works revise my views of posters against minis, I'll stand for the 14.3 miles per gallon and 360 grams per kilometre of CO2.
After how we've scratched our head over the floating of Ferraris on stock markets around the world, do you think, let alone that we're an insignificant speck?
I think it's unlikely.
Yes, that's a good word. That's the word I was thinking. highly unlikely even.
The GTC4 Lusso also gets a recess between the seats specifically to hold the key during driving, a feature the FF didn't have. It's funny, my trousers have pockets. It's a curious one for that.
No. But if you're driving one of those, you're a hipster. You have very tight jeans. Nothing fits in your pockets.
Yeah, or they're so expensive you don't want to ruin the lines of them. We'll expect prices to rise from the £226,023 for the FF. I really like that.
It looks really nice, I have to say.
Having just said I'm going to take loads of pictures, I tend to give up on the Ferrari stand. So anyone who's ever been to the Geneva show on a public pleb day, as opposed to, I suppose the press day is probably not much better, will know just how awful it is around the Ferrari stand. And just hordes of people in branded jackets and shoes and T-shirts and baseball caps and everything. Literally climbing. I've seen them using Jeep Renegades as bumping climbing frames so they could see over the other hordes of other people who have travelled, possibly from the north of Italy, to take pictures of new Ferraris. And it's just not. I just give up. I go, oh yeah, Ferrari. I'll see one sometime. I'll have a wee wander around Mayfair and spot one on the street in a couple of weeks' time. But I like this. I like this a lot.
Yeah, it does look good.
We'll see how we get on. Oh, look, the pictures even have a picture of the key in a little hole.
Mm. And it's not red either. I think it looks really good in the grey that they've got.
I agree.
Although I wouldn't object to taking a red one for a little spin.
Wouldn't object to taking a red one for a little spin, but I would, even with the Ferrari option prices, I would probably end up choosing a grey or a dark blue. Have you seen the FFs in dark blue?
I've seen pictures of them, yes.
So nice.
I think the Ferrari in blue looks really nice. The modern Ferrari in the blue they have is a very good colour.
Mm.
And I would, if it was my own money, I would be specking it in the blue or the grey. It would not be the red.
I would
not
never.
For me.
I don't like. Yeah, it would just be too cheesy. It's why I don't have a. It's why the Mazda is not red. I could have chosen that really nice Mazda red, but everyone buys a red sports car, so I went and bought a bluey grey one.
Actually, funny you should mention that. It's the first one I saw one today in that Mazda red.
Mm.
Whatever that Mazda red is, and you'll know the.
Very nice. No, I don't actually.
Really?
Yeah.
You'll be struck away from the Mazda PR team.
Offer me a car, everyone.
But it's the first one I've seen in red.
Mm.
Actually.
And it's quite nice. They always get black wheels.
Really nice.
Yeah. Red with the black wheels is quite nice.
Mm.
I prefer mine.
Anyway, let's move on.
I've kind of hinted at this one already, really.
You did mention it.
I did mention that you read on that bombshell, Richard Porter's book.
Yes, you recommended it. And when my... I don't read books because I just don't. I listen to audiobooks. Funnily enough, I do a podcast as well, so let's see if we can see a connection. But I listen to audiobooks, and when after you suggested that I should really go and read it,
mm-hmm.
I made sure that my next credit for Audible, I spent it on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, it's an excellent listen stroke read.
Yes.
And I thoroughly recommend anyone who enjoyed Top Gear at all, or enjoys Gareth Jones on speed, or enjoys cars, go and listen to it, because you're going to hear a guy who, for a long period of time, just couldn't believe how lucky he is or was.
Audible do tend to do full, tend to do the complete book. It's not anything fancy. If people are interested in an Audible subscription, or at least a free book from Audible, why not let us know? Okay, drop us a line via the contact page or via Twitter. Drop one of us a line anyway. We'll go through it in a minute. A line, and I'll see what I can do about setting that up. I believe it's possible for podcasts, so let me know, and I'll delve into that, and I'll get us a free Audible subscription, a free Audible book anyway, anybody's interested.
Okay, cool. But yes, there was it was great, and it reminded me how wonderful I felt Top Gear was.
Yes.
To the point where I'm now watching them again on Dave with renewed enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
I did get quite emotional because I am that sort of person when they were discussing Richard Hammond's accident,
mm-hmm.
and everything. And I that really did. That was.
Have
it
you
was
read
excellent writing to just give you? You it made me feel as though I was in the waiting room with them.
Did you ever read or listen to the Richard's book?
That's this month's.
Oh god!
Because he mentions.
Have the tissues handy, mate. If honestly,
I'm going to be on my weekly on my daily walk. I will be weeping openly. I can tell already. I will go with many handkerchiefs.
Listening to the one by Richard Hammond and his wife Trudy, because it's both of them depending on different bits.
Yep.
You will be. I'm a soppy sod, and I know I'm a soppy sod, but other people who read the books at the same time, just whenever they came out, and aren't soppy sods, said that they were having the same problem. Okay? There's going to be a freak gust of wind, blow some grit in your eye when you're out. Every time. Almost every time. It's so touching. It's such a wonderful book. If you haven't, I can't remember the name of it, and I can't turn around and look because it's through next door.
I think it's On the Edge.
It's something like that.
Is it On the Edge?
I'll tell you. We'll again, shove it in the show notes, guys. Sorry. We're not really trying to drive web traffic, but yeah, we will do. It's so good. So, so good.
Yeah. So if you haven't read it, or you haven't, and you have it, or you're like Alan said, if you fancy listening to it and you don't have an Audible account, give us a shout. Or if you do have an Audible account, get it. It's excellent. It just it celebrated what was wonderful about Top Gear and what we all suspected it was and what we all wished we were involved with it.
Yeah.
And as Alan said when he discussed it just after Christmas, we just all wish it ended on a happier note, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, it's great.
Yep. Yes, it is.
So on that bombshell.
On that bombshell. God, we really truly.
Cliche.
It's that. And the other one I try not to do is, and now the news.
I know, I can't help but do it in that voice.
I know. I just, simply because I can't.
We're ingrained.
It's terrible. Anyway. Andrew, between now and then, or if people want to request that we arrange a free month's Audible subscription, how is the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is via Twitter, where I am at Cracked Windscreen. And Alan, if they wish to ask you for Audible stuff.
Yes, quite. If you wish to ask me, then it's at AJP Bradley. And of course, the Twitter for the show is at Motoring Podcast. We have a Facebook page. People have been liking us on Facebook. Thank you. Keep going. Yes.
Is it too many to name? Do we need to name next time?
Too many to name.
Okay.
Bajillions of people have been liking us on Facebook.
That's excellent to hear.
I'm not on Facebook, so I don't know. It's not you. We've also got Instagram, Motoring Podcast, YouTube, youtube.com/motoringpodcast. And of course, if you can't remember any of that or really can't be bothered typing in that many letters, motoringpodcast.com is the best place to find a summary of our recent tweets and some of the blog posts and, of course, episodes and links to iTunes and all the other wonderful places that you can receive these podcasts. If you have enjoyed the podcast, by all means, tweet us. It's wonderful. We love to hear it. We get all British and, you really can't think that. Thank you so much about things. But you know what? iTunes needs to know you love us too. If you could go to iTunes, could give us a 5-star rating, which is just awesome, which is sadly as many as you can give. If you can give 6 stars, then do that as well. And even better is a bit of a review saying, I would have given this a bajillion stars, because all of that does help us quite a lot in Apple's mysterious algorithm, which has us going up and down like a flaming yo-yo. So, I think that's just about everything for there, isn't it, Andrew?
I think
possibly
so.
A bit much.
Well, maybe a bazillion bit much, but that's okay.
That's cool. We can deal with that. So this week, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And until the next time, safe motoring.